Welcome to The Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise to give you the crucial insights you need to be truly well-informed. Let's just picture this for a moment. It's 3 a.m., maybe, yeah. And your organization's entire network is just locked down. Ransomware, every single file encrypted, every system halted. I mean, that scenario sounds terrifying, right? But it used to be rare, and now it feels chillingly common. Every day, honestly, it feels like there's another headline, another cyber attack, ransomware, phishing scams, these huge data breaches. It can feel completely overwhelming. Like it's a game you just can't win, and we're all sort of exposed. But what if I told you there's a crucial shift in thinking? Something that can help organizations and, by extension, you not just survive attacks, but actually thrive, even when, you know, the worst happens. It's exactly what we're diving into today. This deep dive isn't just about understanding the threats. It's about a concept called cyber resiliency. Our mission today, pretty clear, I think. We're going to unpack what cyber resiliency truly means.
Why it's become so absolutely vital here in 2025. And, importantly, how it fundamentally differs from, let's say, traditional cybersecurity thinking. We'll be pulling specific insights, real-world examples from a stack of sources, basically giving you a shortcut to being properly well-informed on this critical topic. So whether you're prepping for a big meeting or just trying to catch up on the latest in tech, or maybe you're just insanely curious, get ready for some hopefully serious aha moments that will empower you with some real knowledge. So let's maybe set the stage first. The cyber threat landscape. It isn't just evolving. It feels like it's accelerating. Just breakneck pace. We're talking about, you know, advanced ransomware campaigns that lock down entire networks. And the growing, frankly, often frightening use of AI to bypass even sophisticated defenses. Making phishing attacks, for example, way more convincing, more insidious. It really feels like the attackers are always one step ahead, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And here's the real shift in thinking that I think is central to all of this. It's not just that attacks can happen. It's that they will, almost inevitably. For so long, our cybersecurity strategies, they were built around just building taller walls, right? Focused solely on prevention firewalls, antivirus software, that sort of thing. But the core insight of resiliency is that this approach, I mean, while it's absolutely necessary, it's just no longer sufficient on its own. We focus so much on keeping everything out, we sometimes forgot maybe to design systems that could gracefully fail and, crucially, quickly recover from within. That's the profound shift. Recognizing attacks are inevitable and actually planning for that reality. We're seeing constant threats, prevalent stuff like ransomware, yeah, but also highly sophisticated phishing, and these supply chain compromises that exploit vulnerabilities deep, deep within an organization's ecosystem. It just makes prevention alone feel like, well, a losing game sometimes. Which kind of raises an important question, doesn't it? Prevention is the goal. Why are attacks still so prevalent? Well, the data is pretty striking. According to Hiscox's Cyber Readiness Report for 2024, a staggering 67% of firms worldwide experienced at least one cyber attack in the past year.
67%.
Yeah. And that's a significant jump from 53% just the year before.
Huge jump.
And if you look specifically at the UK, government data shows 67% of medium-sized businesses, and get this, 74% of large businesses reported breaches. These numbers, they just clearly illustrate that even with robust frontline defenses, incidents are still happening at an alarming, almost unavoidable rate.
Wow, those numbers really are stark. Okay, so if traditional cybersecurity is like putting the absolute strongest locks on your doors, is cyber resiliency then about accepting that a determined attacker might still get in anyway? And it's more about having an escape plan ready, a fire extinguisher, a rapid recovery team. Is that the idea? How would you really articulate the core difference between that old sort of fortress mentality and this newer resilient approach?
That's actually a perfect analogy.
Yeah. Like,
at its core, cyber resiliency is the ability of an organization to adapt to, withstand, and critically recover from cyber threats with minimal damage. Minimal damage to operations, data, and importantly, reputation. It's built on that fundamental recognition that no defense is foolproof, just isn't. So the goal isn't just to block intrusions, but to ensure that when an incident does occur, and let's be honest, it probably will, the business can keep operating with as little disruption as humanly possible. And maybe to really highlight the distinction, we could look at a quick comparison.
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
Okay, think about it like this. Traditional cybersecurity, its goal, prevent attacks, its focus, defense, blocking threats, the approach, usually perimeter protection, and the desired outcome. Fewer breaches. Simple enough.
Right, the classic wall building.
Exactly. Now, cyber resiliency. The goal here is different. Adapt and recover. The focus shifts to continuity and recovery. The approach is much more holistic, adaptive. It's not just the perimeter. And the outcome. Minimized disruption. Not necessarily zero breaches, but minimizing the impact.
Okay, that makes sense. So resiliency takes a broader view.
A much broader, more strategic view, yes. It covers preparedness for disruption, robust business continuity planning, rapid recovery mechanisms, and the ability to maintain core functions even while you're dealing with an active breach. Think of it this way. Security is mostly about preventing problems. Resiliency is about effectively managing them when they inevitably happen. And the often missed insight here, I think, is that these aren't sequential steps. You don't just do security, then resiliency. It's more like a continuously looping feedback system. You know, a weakness found during recovery that feeds back into why you need even stronger prevention in that area. It's dynamic, not static.
Okay, I think I'm getting my head around the what's.
Yes.
But to really grasp why it's so vital, we probably need to look at what happens when organizations lack it. You mentioned reputation, operations. I'm always struck by the tangible consequences. These aren't just abstract risks on a spreadsheet, are they? What do the real-world costs of poor resiliency actually look like, beyond just, you know, losing some data?
No, absolutely not abstract. These incidents, they really bring home the devastating impact. They show the wide-ranging, often cascading disruptions businesses face. We're definitely moving beyond just lost data here. We're talking about massive operational disruptions, yeah. Severely damaged brand reputations. And crippling regulatory fines, legal costs, it all adds up. Our sources actually highlight several specific cases from just this year, 2025, that really underscore this point.
Okay, let's hear them.
Right, so take the UK retailer Marks & Spencer, big name. They suffered a ransomware attack back in April, caused widespread online disruption, warehouse disruption, lasted for several weeks. The estimated loss, around $300 million.
$300 million, just from one attack?
Yeah. That's not just a dent, is it? That's a serious blow to the bottom line. And think about the customer trust. That takes years, maybe longer, to rebuild. Then there's SK Telecom, South Korean communications provider. They had a hack that resulted in the theft of almost 27 million pieces of user data. 27 million. The fallout was immediate. They had to slash their annual revenue forecast by 800 billion won, which is roughly, what, 600 million US dollars. And on top of that, they pledged over 700 billion won just to improve their data security. That's a huge commitment just to start rebuilding trust and, you know, operational integrity. And one more, consider Coinbase, the cryptocurrency exchange. A ransomware attack on their systems, it incurred up to $400 million in expenses.
$400 million, wow.
And again, this wasn't just the direct cost of the attack itself. It included lost business, significant legal costs, obviously severe reputational damage,
yes,
and the sheer necessity of reimbursing customers for stolen crypto assets. It just shows how a single incident can really unravel a business on multiple fronts.
These aren't just abstract numbers on a page, are they? They represent massive operational halts, huge financial penalties, and just a severe erosion of trust. Things that fundamentally impact you as a consumer, or maybe as a business stakeholder. Not to mention the employees caught in the middle. It really highlights why this isn't just some IT problem tucked away in a corner. It's a core business imperative now. So if these are the potential costs, how do organizations actually go about building this kind of protective framework? How do they achieve this state of preparedness? Our sources talk about, I think, three interconnected pillars that guide this process.
Exactly right. Cyber resiliency isn't a single product you buy off the shelf. It's a comprehensive framework. And it is built upon these three pillars, designed together to enable businesses to prepare for threats, contain the damage when they hit, and restore operations quickly. So the first pillar is prevention. Still absolutely vital. This remains the first line of defense, and let's be honest, it's undoubtedly the most cost-effective way to reduce your exposure in the first place.
Makes sense. Stop it before it starts.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Then this involves building strong security foundations. So think timely patching of systems, robust encryption, sophisticated identity management, stringent access controls to limit who can actually reach sensitive data. But crucially, it also includes employee awareness programs. Guarding against common risks like phishing, simple human error, things that are often the entry point. Regular vulnerability testing and red team exercises are also vital here.
Red team, what's that exactly?
Ah, good question. Red teaming is where you basically hire ethical hackers, the good guys, to simulate real-world attacks against your own systems. They proactively try to find weaknesses before the actual malicious actors do. It's like a stress test for your defenses.
Okay, got it. Like a fire drill for cyber attack.
Kind of, yeah. So the outcome of good prevention is a hardened environment that significantly reduces the likelihood of compromise actually happening. Okay, second pillar, detection and response. Because even with the best prevention, some attacks will inevitably get through. It just happens. So this pillar focuses on quickly spotting suspicious activity and then responding effectively, ideally in real time.
So seeing the smoke quickly.
Exactly. This involves constant network monitoring, using tools like behavioral analytics, maybe automated threat intelligence to flag anomalies, anything that indicates an intrusion. And this needs to work across the entire network, right? From database access attempts, maybe unusual logins, to endpoint monitoring, looking for data, trying to sneak out. Once an alert is raised, you need clear response planning. That ensures security teams know exactly how to act. That means isolating affected systems, containing the threat quickly, and communicating effectively across the business. It's crucial. A strong detection and response capability. It can genuinely transform an incident from a full-blown crisis into just a manageable event, limiting the disruption significantly. Finally, pillar number three, recovery and continuity. This pillar accepts that despite all preparation, some attacks will succeed.
The what if it all goes wrong plan.
Pretty much, yeah. The strategies here are designed to reduce the fallout and restore operations as rapidly as possible. This means having secure, regularly tested, immutable backups. These are absolutely critical.
Immutable, meaning they can't be changed.
Exactly. Write once, read many. They ensure your data is available without having to pay ransoms or face long delays rebuilding it from scratch. Think of them like digital time capsules that the attackers, hopefully, can't touch or encrypt. It also involves fallback systems, disaster recovery plans, all designed to help keep core functions online while the main systems are being remediated. And recovery also includes that coordinated communication piece with customers, regulators, all stakeholders to maintain trust during a difficult time. By planning properly for these worst-case scenarios, organizations can minimize downtime, protect their revenue streams, and, fundamentally, continue serving their customers.
That's a really clear breakdown of the components. Prevention, detection and response, recovery and continuity.
Mm-hmm.
But for a leader or maybe a team listening right now thinking, okay, how do we actually build this? Where do we start? What are the concrete, actionable steps to begin developing this kind of robust, multifaceted strategy? It sounds like a lot.
It can feel like a lot, yeah, but it's manageable if broken down. And that's a crucial question because, as you say, cyber resiliency isn't a one-time project you just finish. It requires ongoing attention and some structured steps. First, organizations really need to focus on assessing their risk and identifying critical assets. You have to know what you're protecting. This means a thorough risk assessment, mapping potential threats against your most critical business assets. Things like, you know, customer data, intellectual property, financial systems, whatever, is vital. This ensures your resources, your budget, your effort are focused where they matter most, rather than being spread too thin trying to protect everything equally.
Prioritization, basically.
Exactly. Second, adopting an effective security framework is key. Provides structure. Frameworks like NIST, that's the National Institute of Standards and Technologies framework, or ISO 27001, which is an international standard, or even adopting the principles of zero trust.
Zero trust. Sounds dramatic.
It kind of does, but the principle is simple. Never trust, always verify. It means you don't automatically trust anything or anyone inside or outside your network. Access is strictly controlled. Using one of these frameworks provides a proven structure for managing security. It ensures consistency, accountability, helps align with industry standards, and it guides investment and gives you clear benchmarks to measure your progress against. And third, and this is often underestimated, it's about aligning technology with people.
The human element.
Always crucial. Resiliency isn't just about the tech stack. It's fundamentally about the humans interacting with it. So strong data governance policies, yes. Regular employee training, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And fostering a genuine culture of security awareness across the entire organization. This is especially vital in guarding against threats like InfoStealer. Yeah. Malware designed specifically to steal login credentials. They often use social engineering, phishing attacks, tricking employees into giving up valuable access. So your employees can accidentally become the entry point if they're not aware and trained. Beyond those steps, there are also some essential tools and technologies that play a central role now. We mentioned immutable backups. Alongside those, you often hear about cyber vaults. These are basically non-negotiable for serious recovery.
Okay, immutable backups we covered can't be changed. What's a cyber vault then?
Think of a cyber vault as taking immutability a step further. It physically or logically isolates those critical backups from your main production network. It creates an air gap or a highly secure separate environment. This drastically reduces the chance of the backups themselves being compromised if your primary environment gets hit by ransomware, for example. Together, immutable backups and vaults provide that reliable, untainted foundation you need for recovery without paying a ransom. It's your safety net.
Right, the secure safety net. Mm. Makes sense. What else?
Then there's AI-driven threat detection and response. Now, AI is definitely a double-edged sword.
Yeah, you mentioned AI helping attackers earlier.
Exactly. It's a growing threat in their hands. But it's also an incredibly powerful defensive tool when used correctly. AI-driven security systems can analyze vast patterns of behavior across networks, endpoints, user activity, spotting anomalies, and detecting new or evolving threats in real time. Things that human teams might miss or just couldn't process fast enough. And then automated response functions can kick in immediately, isolating a compromised device, blocking a malicious connection, locking an account. This significantly shortens that critical time between an intrusion happening and containment starting. It can turn a potential catastrophe into just a contained incident, much less damage. And finally, don't forget recovery planning tools.
Tools to help plan the recovery itself.
Yeah, platforms that help organizations actually test and execute their response plans for worst-case scenarios. They're not just theoretical documents sitting on a shelf. These tools can simulate outages, they can validate that your backup processes actually work as expected, coordinate incident playbooks across different teams. By rehearsing recovery, businesses can build the muscle memory and ensure critical systems can genuinely be restored in, say, hours, not weeks. Modern tools can even automate the failover to backup infrastructure and provide real-time tracking of the recovery process. It transforms strategy into practical, actionable capability.
That's a pretty comprehensive toolkit right there. Immutable backups, vaults, AI detection, recovery planning tools. But with so many complex solutions, it could still feel like a bit of a labyrinth for some organizations. How does an organization even begin to map out where they stand on this whole resiliency journey? Is there a way to gauge their level of preparedness, sort of like a maturity scale?
That's a really important question, yeah. Because understanding your current posture, where you are right now, is absolutely the first step to improvement. You need a baseline. And our sources do describe maturity levels for cyber resiliency. These basically reflect how advanced an organization's capabilities are across those three pillars: preventing, responding to, and recovering from cyber incidents. So at the lowest level, you have what's called the reactive stage.
Sounds like what it is, reacting after the fact.
Exactly. Here, security measures are often basic, maybe inconsistent. Responses to incidents, they tend to be ad hoc, relying heavily on manual intervention after the damage has already occurred. This usually leads to longer downtime, significantly higher costs, more chaos. Moving up from there, we find the proactive stage. Firms at this level have started to implement structured security policies. They're doing regular monitoring. They have formal incident response plans developed. Threats are generally identified and contained faster, which reduces the scale of the impact and improves operational continuity. Much better, but still room to grow. And then the most advanced level is predictive.
Predicting attacks. Sounds like science fiction almost.
Well, maybe not predicting the exact attack, but anticipating risks. Organizations here leverage advanced analytics, automation, threat intelligence to actually anticipate and address potential risks before they fully materialize into incidents. They can adapt much more quickly to new threats, minimize disruption far more effectively, and often maintain a strong competitive advantage because of this resilience. So, understanding where an organization sits on the spectrum, reactive, proactive, predictive, helps them identify the gaps and take targeted steps to strengthen their resiliency over time.
Okay, that maturity model makes sense. Reactive, proactive, predictive. So let's try and bring it back now to some really practical advice for our listener. You've given us so much to think about, a really comprehensive picture. But if you had to boil it down, what are the absolute key takeaways for improving cyber resiliency? What are the non-negotiables maybe?
Okay, yeah, boiling it down. If we connect all this back to the bigger picture, it's fundamentally about moving beyond just prevention. It's about creating a culture and a strategy that genuinely prepares for disruption and ensures fast, effective recovery. Our sources consistently highlight maybe six key practices that every organization should probably be undertaking or at least aiming for. First, conduct a full risk assessment. Identify your critical systems and data. You absolutely cannot protect what you don't understand, and you can't prioritize if you don't know what's most valuable or vulnerable.
Know thyself, Cyber Edition.
Kinder, yeah. Second, map your existing capabilities against a recognized security framework like NIST or ISO 27001. Use it as a roadmap. Measure your progress. Third, invest in immutable backups and test them regularly. Don't just set them up. Make sure they actually work when you need them. This is your last crucial line of defense against ransomware and major data loss.
Testing is key.
Absolutely. Fourth, implement continuous monitoring and real-time threat detection. The faster you see a threat, the faster you can react and contain the damage. Speed matters. Fifth, develop and rehearse incident response and recovery playbooks. Practice really does make perfect, especially when a real crisis hits. It turns potential chaos into a coordinated, effective effort. And finally, number six, provide regular employee training to build that culture of awareness and accountability. Your people are either your strongest defense or potentially your weakest link. Empower them with knowledge.
That's incredibly clear and actionable advice. Six key practices: risk assessment, framework mapping, immutable backups and testing, monitoring, rehearsing plans, and training people.
Got it. Wow. We've really gone from that initial feeling of being overwhelmed by the constant news of cyber attacks
right, to
hopefully understanding a much more strategic, proactive approach.
Mm.
This whole concept of cyber resiliency, this deep dive has really shown, I think, that it isn't about trying to avoid all attacks, because as you said, that's probably just not possible anymore. Instead, it's about expecting the unexpected, building the organizational muscle, maybe, to bounce back stronger, faster, and with minimal impact. It really is a crucial shift, isn't it? From just defense to genuine adaptability and continuous operation, even under pressure. Now, just before we wrap up, maybe a final thought for you, our listener, to mull over. If you think about your own digital footprint, your personal data accounts, or perhaps the organization you work for, what critical assets, if they were compromised, would cause the most significant disruption?
And thinking about that, what single practical step could you maybe take, even starting today, to make their recovery just a little bit more resilient? Something to ponder. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the vital topic of cyber resiliency. We really hope you're leaving feeling well-informed and perhaps a bit more empowered. Until next time, stay curious,